Good evening, everybody. Good evening. Good to see you all. Well, this is the first kind of series of classes that we're starting for the new year, for 2016. Can you believe 2016? I never thought I would be saying this. Last spring, we had a series of classes on practicing with the afflictive emotions, the kind of emotions that we don't want to have, anger, fear, despair, grief, shame, those kind of things. And they really are dark, aren't they? We really don't want those emotions. They're unpleasant, they're painful. And in the class that we did, we looked at these and also acknowledged that each one of those contain a kind of kernel of transformative wisdom, that there's something that we can glean, we can help to change ourselves from those emotions. And then we looked at ways to use the kind of a Buddhist practices, a meditation practices, to help us develop a kind of more wholesome relationship with the dark side, the dark force. Those of you who've seen the latest Star Wars movie. But so we thought in this series of classes, we want to look at the positive emotions, the emotions that generally we welcome. But particularly, we want to look at those emotions from the point of view of how they support connection. Connection with each other, of course, perhaps connection with ourselves, and connection with the world. Why connection? Why this focus on connection? Well, clearly connection is perhaps one of the most fundamental truths that we grapple with over and over again when we're transfixed by the many kind of shades of loneliness and isolation that we experience in our lives, feeling that sense of being cut off or having to push away. We certainly know that kind of bitter truth of being separate, being different, being other. But for whatever reason, given our human condition, we have to work on and practice kind of the truth of connection to really see it and allow it to open in its fullness. In our everyday life, we tend, I think, to forget this view of connection, this teaching of connection that actually surrounds us, and certainly resonates through many of the world's religious traditions. When I was preparing for this this class, I came across a quote by Martin Luther King Jr. That he wrote in 1967, called, it was part of a sermon that he gave called A Christmas Sermon on Peace. And this is, I wanted to read this because I think it's quite interesting. So he wrote, "It really boils down to this, that all life is interrelated. We are all caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied to a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. We are made to live together because of the interrelated structure of reality." Did you ever stop to think that you can't leave for your job in the morning without being dependent upon most of the world? You get up in the morning, go to the bathroom, and reach over for the sponge, and that's handed to you by a Pacific Islander. You reach for a bar of soap, and that's given to you at the hands, perhaps, of a Frenchman. And then you go to the kitchen and drink your coffee for the morning, and that's poured into your cup by a South American. And maybe you want tea, and that's poured into your cup by a Chinese. Or maybe you're desirous of having cocoa for breakfast, and that's poured into your cup by a West African. And when you reach over for your toast, and that's given to you at the hands of an English-speaking farmer, not to mention the baker. And before you finish eating breakfast in the morning, you have depended upon more than half the world. In this way, our universe is structured. This is the interrelated quality. We aren't going to have peace on earth until we recognize this basic fact of the interrelated structure of all reality. I think today, although this is written by a Protestant minister, Martin Luther King, I think most of us would perhaps recognize it as a Buddhist view, right? But really, isn't it simply the way things are? You know, before we have finished breakfast, we have been touched by half the world. In the Mahayana stream of Buddhism, which Zen is a part of, there's a famous image of Indra's net that conveys this basic truth of the world. In this image, the universe is depicted as an infinite net. And at each node, each cross point where the lines connect, there's a multifaceted jewel that's really very highly polished. And each jewel at each node reflects the images that are being reflected in all the other nodes, all the other jewels, so that when you look at one jewel, you see them all. Perhaps it's like looking into a mirror when you have two mirrors facing each other. I used to love this as a kid, where you had bathroom mirrors that opened like that, you know, the bathnet cabinet, I'd look in. And it'd be like Michael's hands go on forever in both directions, no matter which way I looked. Who'd have thought? Images repeating over and over again into seemingly infinity. That's the image of Indra's net. Dharma, this basic Buddhist teaching, I think is really all about connection. It's about dismantling, taking apart the seeming boundaries between me and everything else, between you and everything else. So, it's natural, of course, that the Buddhist teachings are full of practices that nurture and strengthen our capacity for deep and meaningful connections with the world, with others, and even with ourselves, because for some strange reason we often feel even disconnected from ourselves. So in this series of classes, we're going to be looking at qualities that will help to nurture connection in these various ways that I've mentioned. So we'll be looking at trust, generosity, empathy, gratitude, forgiveness, and integrity. We're looking at how these qualities perhaps foster connection for us, and how, particularly, how we can cultivate these in our daily lives as a way to deepen our connection. Deepen our connection. I believe that it's true, we all want connection. And yet at the same time that in our struggle to find and hold on to connection or relationship, depending on what word you want to use, we suffer. It's hard. It really is hard to have a deep connection, to have a deep relationship. We suffer quite a lot as we try to relate to those around us. Perhaps it's the greatest source of our suffering, of our everyday suffering that we experience in our lives. I think this is why people have cats and dogs. Much easier to have a good relationship. But remember, in the Buddhist tradition, this suffering, this discontent, or to use the Pali Sanskrit word dukkha, is fundamental to our existence. And the Buddha wrote, at least as we find it in the earliest scriptures, he wrote, "Now, what friends is the noble truth of dukkha, this noble truth of suffering, of discontent?" He says, "Birth is dukkha, aging is dukkha, sickness is dukkha, death is dukkha." And if that wasn't enough, "Association with the unwanted, the unbeloved," as this translation has it, "is dukkha. Separation from the loved is dukkha. Not getting what is wanted is dukkha. In short, the constant changing of our life is dukkha." The early texts, when we look at them, they really encourage us to look closely at the discomfort of our lives, the dukkha of our lives. But they don't say, it doesn't say, that we're burdened with some special pain or suffering all the time. Sometimes we suffer quite strongly, and sometimes we enjoy our lives. But the teaching is that the kind of wake-up message is discomfort, dissatisfaction, dukkha will always appear in our everyday life. That's just the way it is. We cannot turn this life into a heavenly abode, no matter what the advertisements that we see on TV tell us. I think the Buddha made this understanding of dukkha, this understanding of dissatisfaction in our lives, his foundational teaching, his first noble truth, as we know it today. He made it because we don't want to accept it, which, of course, just adds to the dukkha of our lives. Right? I don't want this to be true. And therefore, more discomfort arises. Connection, relationships also include dukkha. There is a vast amount of discomfort involved in relationships of all kinds. Family relationships, work relationships, sexual relationships, teacher-student, human, non-human, etc. That's just the way it is. Even in strong and healthy relationships, there is dukkha. The perfect, happily ever after relationship is a mirage that distracts us. When we're seeking that, when we're seeking a perfect relationship, that distracts us from seeing what is right in front of us. And what is in front of us are paths of connection and intimacy that we could not anticipate or expect. Like the rest of our life, in general, connection or relationship with others includes discomfort. And at the root of the discomfort is the wish that it wouldn't be uncomfortable. That we could, if we looked hard enough, find the right person. Right? You just haven't tried, what was that called? Dharma Connect? That online dating service?
Dharma Match.
Yes. So we look for the right person, we look for the right way to connect and avoid discomfort. And, of course, when discomfort arises, the gloss wears off a new relationship perhaps, or something else, our first reaction is often just to pull away, to disconnect, perhaps blaming the other, or the circumstances, or ourselves in some way. And in doing so, we once again fall into the fallacy of being separate, being isolated, of being other. So how do we use our practice and our understanding of Dharma to navigate skillfully through the troubled waters of relationship and enter into a deeper connection and intimacy, rather than isolation and loneliness? There are many possibilities, many ways, and I hope together through this series that we'll uncover ways that will help us all to gently shift and deepen our connection, our sense of intimacy. So tonight, let's focus on the emotion and practice of gratitude. That's what I'd like to focus on for now. I think for most of us, gratitude naturally arises when we experience and accept kindness from others. I think those two things are necessary. We experience and we accept it. But kindness can, gratitude can also be cultivated and deepened. Or maybe a more accurate way to say this is that gratitude flows into our awareness when we allow our self-focused stories to rest, to quieten and down. Think for a moment, how often do you really feel a genuine sense of gratitude? And I'm not talking about the kind of gratitude that comes from finding that, oh, I haven't forgotten my wallet after all, it's right here. Or when we're stopped by the constable and they simply give us a warning rather than a speeding ticket that maybe we deserve. But rather a kind of profound sense of appreciation from the kindness that's being given us. I think we seldom experience true gratitude. And I was thinking, what is gratitude? One way to consider it is that gratitude is the acknowledgement of connection. Or maybe gratitude is the experience of connection itself. Gratitude is born when that pervasive sense of not enough, needs to be a little different, when we lay that down and we rest in that quality of enough, of contentment. A gratitude, I believe, connects us to that which is much bigger than ourself. It is a place of quiet, internal quiet, that allows the world to enter. Have you noticed you're always happy when you feel gratitude? It's not like, oh darn, there's gratitude again. We're always happy. A sense of happiness arises. And I think that sense of happiness arises because we are finally at home in the fullness of our being. We're not alone. So what does that mean in terms of like personal relationships, of connecting with other people? Well, consider for a moment, what do you think is the ratio of mental criticism to gratitude in our relations to other people. Get the drift? The number of moments when we want our beloved, our friend, a stranger to meet us in a better way, to act and speak differently than they are. Why can't he put the toilet seat down? When will she learn not to burn the toast? I wish he would stop cleaning his ears in public. Why can't she just leave me alone for a while? You know, those kind of perhaps spoken or unspoken criticisms that we have? Do those kind of moments seem to outnumber the moments when we really feel appreciation for acts of tenderness or kind words, smiles, or laughs? Surely, for most of us, the kind of not enough or needs to be different is really weightier. That critical voice is stronger. And so, if this is the case, then the relationship becomes heavy with dissatisfaction. As we kind of total up, you know, the number of grievances versus the amount of appreciation. We seldom arrive in a place of gratitude because we tend to hold on to the memories of what's painful, to kind of worry, pick at our scabs of what, he said. I remember yesterday and the day before, he said. And we resist opening to a really full sense of gratitude when we're shown kindness or when we reflect, maybe. I call it the, perhaps in my own experience, yes, but. Yes, but. That's true, but. Perhaps you've experienced something along the same lines, like, yeah, my parents were pretty good, but they were so controlling. I really like my girlfriend, but I wish she would something. The cultivation of gratitude, I think, helps open us up and connect by letting go of those yes buts and taking some time to acknowledge and rest in what we have received. Because what we have received is far greater when we really take the time to look closely. So this cultivation of gratitude doesn't require kind of intellectual analysis, doesn't require, some kind of complex social theory to understand. What's difficult, I think, is to really see reality as it is. To see what we have received. I think that's hard. Because our tendency, of course, is to, the yes but, or the focus on the negative qualities. Resting in gratitude, developing this ability to rest in gratitude, I think we become grounded in the simple reality of how we have always been supported and cared for. And gradually the heart opens to a kind of grace that underlies all of life. The practice of shifting our awareness, our attention, to the many ways we are supported allows us to no longer be ensnared by the problems and the obstacles that cause us to linger in suffering and self-pity. There are many ways to practice gratitude, to really develop it. For example, when a sense of gratitude arises, rest in it, cherish it, kind of allow it to inform your life. Spend some time when gratitude naturally arises. Another practice, perhaps before going to sleep at night, bring to mind maybe 3 or 4 events or things or exchanges that's happened throughout the day that you're grateful for. And again, just rest in that sense of gratitude for a while. Oh. And another exercise, the one that we'll do here in a moment. In Japan, there's a Buddhist-oriented therapy called Nikan. Nikan therapy, seeing inside is the literal translation, Nikan therapy. And one part of that training is to really remember actively what you have gratitude towards. And even gratitude towards those things which were difficult, but they taught you lessons. Right? It's challenging, but I learned so much. I learned something. Gratitude for that. Now, the therapy, I don't know all that much about it. It's kind of, there's many more aspects to it. But one aspect of it is a daily reflection of what you have received, what you have a sense of gratitude for. And it kind of goes like for 10 or 15 minutes every day, you list what you have received in detail, concretely. So you can limit, you can, for example, start by focusing on what you have received from one person. And then include other people, perhaps, that have supported you throughout the day, things you have received from the environment, things that you've noticed, things that made you happy. You just write them all down for 10, 15 minutes. And then you look at it and reflect on what has supported you this day. In the exercise, you can be as specific as you can, and you just, you know, write down as many items as you can remember. You know, how did someone support you? Did someone open a door? Did you get a smile, a nice exchange at the grocery store? Did someone send you a nice email? Someone listened to your complaints? Whatever. Seat on the bus, compliment on what you're wearing. And expands, of course, to, you know, the food, the garden that you walk through, the trees that you saw, you know, the dawn, sunrise, pets. And there are other steps to this process, but this is the first one, and I think really crucial. And that's what I'd like us to do right now. We'll do a little exercise. Exercise our gratitude muscle a little bit. And I actually had prepared this already, Kate.
Oh, they don't need the pads.
I don't think so. I think that's enough for everybody.
It is pens. So maybe pens.
Yeah. Oh, could I have one? Just
there. There's one there for me.
Okay. So I'm just going to hand out, have a little pen. Have a pen. And I included on here a poem about gratitude by Denis Levertov, a poem that I really, really love.
Try your pen if it doesn't work.
But what I would like you to do for this, we'll just take, let's just take maybe 5 minutes. And I'd like you to, first of all, think of maybe one person that you met today or yesterday. Maybe a person in your life or just someone you met. And think about what you received from them. And just try to write down as many concrete things as you can without thinking too hard about it. And then expand outwards. Or expand and include other things that you've received that you feel a slight sense or a strong sense or a deep sense of gratitude for. Does that make sense? So just make 5 minutes. Kind of don't let the pen rest. Just write whatever you can. So, go ahead. Everyone got a pen and paper? And if there isn't a person to start with, just start anywhere. Start with breakfast.